Mike's
morning,
live.
Sherry. We can go live now.
Mike's your...
Oh, they are live. Thank you, Matt. All right. Well, good morning, everyone. So, Matt, just to clarify, are we broadcasting and recording? Or what's the status?
Yep.
Okay. Very good. Good morning, everyone. I'm Julie Fedorchak. I'm currently chair of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the state capitol for an informal hearing with Ottertail Power on a couple of cases. Case number PU-22-312 and 22-322. These are for the advanced grid infrastructure cost recovery and a proposed economic development.
We have a third one on there, too.
Oh, yeah. Let's see here. And 22-367. Excellent. All right. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Christman, do you?
No, I do not.
And Commissioner Haugenhofer, do you? These are cases in your portfolio. Do you wish to lead the discussion this morning, or would you prefer that we do that from this end?
Commissioner Fedorchak, I would appreciate it if you would lead it from your end, but I'm fully engaged.
Okay. Very good. We appreciate that. Do you have any opening comments?
No, I do not.
Okay. Victor, any opening comments from staff?
No. Staff has filed memos in all three of these cases for the commission's convenes, so we have no opening thoughts at this time.
All right. Very good. Thank you. All right. Well, I think we'll turn it, as is customary, we'll turn it over to the company to sort of walk through your presentation. And, Stuart, do you wish? Oh, let's go around and introduce everybody first before we do that. I forgot that piece. Mm-hmm. All right, Randy and I have already done that, and Sherry. So we'll start here with Adam.
Adam Renfin, staff.
Victor Shook, with staff.
Kerry Stephenson, Associate General Counsel for Ottertail Power.
Paula Foster, Supervisor of Regulatory Analysis for Ottertail Power.
Al Kankritz, Manager, Advanced Concepts, Energy Management and Control, Ottertail Power.
Stuart Tomerdahl, Manager, Regulatory Administration with Ottertail Power. We have two people online joining us as well. And I can go ahead and introduce them. Tanya Kelm, who's their Principal Energy Market Engineer. And Christina Zuniga, who's a Rates Analyst.
Rob Frank with us, North Dakota staff.
Brian Johnson, PUC staff.
Chris, why don't you grab
You want to do all the cases now?
Well, we'll just introduce everyone for the record, and so Sherry knows who's in the room.
Chris Hansen, staff.
Green light.
Jeff Hoff, Ottertail Power Company, Energy Management Rep in Jamestown.
Jesse Tomford, Ottertail Power, Senior Industrial Services Engineer.
Svetlana Fedji, Ottertail Power, Pricing Analyst.
Good morning, Dave Prozik, Supervisor Pricing, Ottertail Power.
Good morning, Chris Waltz, Manager of Sales and Implementation at Ottertail Power.
All right.
It must be pretty quiet back at the office.
Okay. So that, Sherry, for your benefit, that includes everybody in the room except for Matt, who's running the show on the IT side. Okay, so with that, well, now it's your turn, Stuart. And,
all right.
Why don't we best to go through each one separately, I think, and so you can just let us know which one you want to start with and go from there.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Commissioner, and thanks for having us here this morning. We are going to start out with case 22312, which is the what we originally called our advanced grid infrastructure rider. If you want to advance, and we just have a little list of participants on slide two. For this particular case, we'll be kind of doing a little bit of shuffling with people as we move into the other EDR informals. If you want to advance to slide 3. Quick summary of the agenda this morning. We are going to talk a little bit about a possible name change for our rider. We'll walk through a summary of the request, which was included in our initial filing. I'll turn it over to Al and Tanya, who will walk through some of the specifics of the projects that we're seeking recovery of. Paula will talk a little bit about the revenue requirement, rate design. And then we'd like to have a little bit of a conversation with regard to AMI opt-out as well, and at least share some of our thoughts with regard to that at the end, and then we'll close this particular informal. Next slide, please. We recognize that there was maybe a little concern about the name we had chosen for our rider. We are, open and actually recommending that we change the name of the rider to what we have reflected here on slide 4, to call it Electric Utility Infrastructure Cost Rider. A couple of reasons. I think we have a similarly named rider in one of our other jurisdictions, which is recovering the same types of projects, and so from an internal perspective, having the naming convention consistent would make sense. And so this is what we would like to move forward with this particular rider in calling it. And we can, we can supplement our record here with updated tariff sheets and things that would have this new name included in it. That is our recommendation.
Do you think that tells people what it is, like the average person? Because it doesn't say meter any place, and it feels like that should be part of the message, because it is ultimately most of what's included.
Yep. There is, there's actually 3 different projects that are part of this. AMI is a big part, but there's also our outage management system and our load management system. So it's a little bit broader in terms of just the meter project, while there's a significant amount of integration and interplay between all of these. We are open to,
other, I'll think about it some more,
suggestions, but this is our initial.
I'm just going to say on that point, I'd be open to something that emphasized that meter was a big part of it too, but I don't have any ideas for that. I am, though, glad to hear of a change that it's not making it sound like this has to do with the grid as a whole. What you're proposing is an improvement, at least.
We've referred to it as that through the rest of the presentation.
Sure.
So
that's fine, sir.
Okay. If you want to advance the next slide, please. So just to summarize the request that we included in our filing, we are requesting the commission approval to establish this particular rider, and it's primarily for the recovery of 3 multi-year type projects. As I mentioned earlier, the advanced metering infrastructure project, a new outage management system, and then replacement of our existing demand response system. The total revenue requirement for this initial recovery period, which would run from January through December 2023, is about $3 million. The proposed rates would go into effect January 1. The rate design is developed on a per meter basis, and we'll touch on that a little bit later in the presentation, but it is a per meter rate design that's set up for recovery for this. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Al, and he's going to walk us through the next few slides with regard to our the AMI project and our outage management system projects.
morning. Thank you, Stuart. I think Joanne Thompson has participated in some of these, maybe the ADP filing a year ago, and we talked about Otter Tail moving forward with kind of a group of projects that we call Innovation 2030. And as a part of that, we had three objectives. We've got increase our customer engagement, improve safety and reliability, and improve our business efficiency. And so when we look at the projects that we're going to talk about today, we really feel like they fit that niche very well for Otter Tail Power Company. When we look at our advanced metering infrastructure project, as you know, we've got approximately 170,000 meters in our system in total. And approximately 76,000 of those are actually in North Dakota. And so we're looking at replacing all of our meters with an AMI meter, advanced metering infrastructure meter. I think we've mentioned in the past that we've selected Lannis and Gear as our provider for the meters, the field area network, and our meter data management system as well. So we've got an integrated approach to how we're going to get from the meter, the data from the meter back into our systems to integrate to our CIS and other systems at Otter Tail Power Company. As we go about our project, then it'll require a field area network, which will be a collector, basically, or a single router collector at each of our communities. It's larger communities, Jamestown's, Devil's Lakes, Rugby's, places like that. We probably have more than one, but we have so many small communities in North Dakota that one will be enough to serve those communities. That will collect the data from the meter, transmit it back via cellular modem to our head-end system, and then off to our meter data management system.
Matt, can you forward this slide?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Or I don't know.
Yeah. One more slide. Yeah, there you go. Back.
Six.
Perfect, right there. Sorry about that. So that's our system. Our costs are laid out there. You know, in large buckets, you can see how we've allocated those costs. Our meters, the meter installation, the efforts to integrate the meters, and those kinds of things are a large portion of our costs for the project. The field area network and then the meter data management system make up the other large components of the project costs.
Al, what's the life expectancy of these meters?
When we went out in RFP, and then as we've continued to work with the vendors, we are expecting a 20-year life. As you know, Otter Tail's ran our system a long time. We got a lot of old things that are out there in a good way, I mean that. And we expect them that we will utilize them for that 20-year life of the product.
And is there any sort of a guarantee on those? Or?
We did. In our contract with Lannis and Gear, we have things like excessive failure warranty. We've got initial 3 or 5 year warranty, and then the excessive failure beyond that. So we do have a good contract. We do have a good situation with Lannis and Gear to stand behind their product. And we have a long-term look back to make sure that the system will effectively continue to operate for that 20-year period as well. So we do have, I think, a good place that we've landed with our contract with them.
Okay. So where is that contractor located?
The contractor, or Lannis and Gear, the provider?
Yes.
So their primary headquarters is in Sweden. They've got a large contingency in Alpharetta, Georgia, and then they've got offices in Minnesota as well. So we're working with a lot of the people out of Minnesota right now to get our meter fleet and get our system up and running, and then their manufacturing facilities are largely in Mexico that we'll get the meters from.
So they're manufactured in Mexico,
yep.
Primarily
in Mexico, right?
What sort of cybersecurity filters did you have to go through to choose those vendors and the suppliers and the manufacturing facility? All of that, is it approved by NERC or whoever is looking at these and providing approval?
Yeah, we worked with certainly our IT department. I don't have the complete answer to that because I rely on that team to help us with the cybersecurity issues. But we have our cybersecurity team at Otter Tail was heavily engaged in our contract piece with Lannis and Gear. We reviewed our requirements, we reviewed their requirements, and then what we also did is we contacted other utilities that have used Lanesson gear, and they've ran the red team tests on their cyber systems where they, you know, try to infiltrate their security protocols, and everybody has said that that their standards have far exceeded the utilities requirements that they've had at their other utilities as well. So I think we're in a good place with that as we look ahead. So,
are they approved or on the approved list of vendors by who? Where did that list come from we were talking about? Is it NERC?
I think so. I see the heads nodding in the background there.
And that means they are approved, or that NERC is the one that approves them. And is this an approved vendor, I guess?
Yes.
Okay.
Would you spell out the name of that Landis?
Landis and Yurts, yeah. So L-A-N-D-I-S. And they typically have a plus sign for and, but and then gear, G-Y-R. Actually, in some of our research we did, they're actually the largest AMI meter supplier in the United States, I believe, right now. So,
okay. Sherry, if you have questions, just jump in.
I will.
Okay.
I do have questions, but not pertaining to this at this time.
Okay.
Should we go to the next slide?
Sure.
You know, you're well aware of our service territory. Probably nothing new on this slide, but 70,000 square miles, about 37,000 in the state of North Dakota. Again, 130,000 customers, about 59,000 of those customers in North Dakota. And that, you know, really, as we look at AMI, and we've talked about it in our filings, it's just that vast amount of space that we serve customers, we really see AMI as being, you know, a helpful method for reading meters and working with our customers to provide good data at a costly, at a more costly, least costly opportunity for us and our customers. So, next slide, please. So, as we've noticed in our filing, you know, one of the advantages that we have is because we've waited, we didn't go forward with an automated meter reading system. We went from manual meter reading to an AMI solution, and so therefore we're bypassing the automated meter reading, and so we're able to take advantage of the reduction in our costs for that to go from manual meter reading to automated meter reading. So that's really one of our biggest reduction in costs here. As we look at this, we will not have to use contracted meter reading, and then as you're aware, we have about 100 of our service reps, which are journeyman linemen, that do meter reading for us at this time. And as we work, as we move ahead, those people will come off from meter reading and work on other tasks, and then we'll actually have a reduction in some of our field staff to accommodate the meter reading that won't be done any longer.
Is that going to happen kind of naturally with attrition?
Yeah, that's our plan over about a 10-year period.
And how many people do you estimate that'll...
They currently expect it to be about 19 people mm-hmm. across their service territory. And every day they're kind of re-looking at that, seeing what that looks like. We've got a lot of infrastructure needs as we're looking ahead here, too, so we're...
Sure.
It's kind of a moving target, but that was the latest estimate.
And then one other question on costs. Since you kind of skipped the interim step, have you estimated what was saved by not deploying sort of the automated meter reading is the kind of interim between the manual and this?
You know,
could you give a ballpark even?
Boy, that's a good question. You know, a manual... all the savings, which is about $6 million, $7 million a year is what we expect from the meter reading costs. So if we would have done AMR, we would have seen those savings then.
Sure.
But then today we wouldn't be able to take advantage of it. So that's what puts us in this good position, that now we'll have two-way communication from the meter, and we're really excited about that opportunity and what it's going to mean for our customers. So I don't know that we would be here today talking about AMI if we had done AMR in the past, honestly, because it would have been a cost to our mm-hmm. customers, because we would have seen the savings earlier. So,
plus, but you did save the customers the cost of that
technology
and that investment.
Right, right, yeah.
Okay. I have a question.
Talk about that if you had a figure, so.
We can see if we can figure that out.
Or an estimate.
Yeah.
Do you have something, Sherry?
Yes, I did. When you talk about savings, when I went through the application, you guys do a job on breaking down costs a lot. But you reference savings regarding everything from staff to potentially workers' comp savings and all that. But I never see a breakdown of the cost savings on how you get to your, I believe you said, Al, $6 million.
Yeah, it's a rough number.
I never see a breakdown on stuff like that on cost savings. It's just a number.
Yeah, we can.
And I guess I'm just wondering if there's more detailed information on how we arrive at stuff on all those cost savings that you bring up.
Definitely, we have the other documentation for that we can provide if you'd like. I can speak to a few of them off the top of my head that I do remember, as I mentioned. We have approximately, when we look at labor savings for reading meters, that's about $4.5 million. Let me just back up here. I think I have a note.
But doesn't that get reallocated? I mean, that labor cost? You're not talking about laying people off.
We're talking about a reduction over a 10-year period approximately to have less staff that will be doing that, and we see that as about 19 people.
Down to, okay.
So initially there'll be some upfront attrition. People will move over to some capital projects because of our system needs for capital improvements, and then the go-forward plan is a reduction in staff.
Okay.
Yep, and then contract meter rating is about $2.5 million a year. And then we have a handheld right now, because we read meters manually. We have a handheld system device that we have to maintain. That's about $600,000 we estimate for that. And then just customer care, customer service reps, taking calls from customers. we estimate that at about a couple hundred thousand dollars a year. So not substantial, but we do feel there's going to be a savings there when a customer calls up. We'll be able to both see the same data. As everybody's aware, we'll get interval data. And as we move forward with our new customer engagement platform, that data will be available for the customer to see and our customer service reps to see, and so they can work together off the same set of data instead of, well, this is what you had last month, this is where you're, you know, we don't know where you're at today because we don't have the meter reading on a daily basis. So we expect that there's going to be some savings there from our customer service side as well.
With the use of this new technology and and requirements, do you foresee adding staff to meet the needs of these new programs, especially in the area of cybersecurity, computer engineering, et cetera?
Not in that area. We have selected Lannis and Gear as a software as a service solution, so they're hosting. They're going to be accountable for the cybersecurity side of that. Our internal cyber team will just have to maintain the interface there. So that's something they expect to be able to handle with their current staffing. However, we do expect that we'll need staff to maintain and run our system. You know, with any new system, it always takes more bodies, and those have been factored into our costs as as our go forward costs for the project, implementing the project.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Other items we've already noted or talked about: reduced safety risks. You know, we're traveling less miles. That'll be help for our team. You know, there are dog bites. You know, we maybe think about them, but they are real. You know, people do get bit, unfortunately, and we're grateful that will be less for us, if you would. I don't know how many we actually have in a year, but I know they do happen. We'll also have, from the customer side, the meter has, you know, temperature sensing. It's got a tilt sensing as well. So if a situation where a meter tilted off a house came up, we'd get an alarm about that. If it's too hot, we'd get an alarm about that. And actually, some of those alarms can get passed right to the customer as well. So we, although they're not going to be frequent, we are grateful that there'll be some of those opportunities there. Of course, service connect and reconnect. All of our meters will have, except for the current transformer-related meters, they'll all have a disconnect in them. So, we'll have the opportunity to remotely connect or disconnect customers, and so we won't have to have somebody run out to do that. And then just the remote, you know, the meter status verification. So if somebody calls up, has a question, if their power's on, you know, we'll be able to assess that and determine if, in fact, there might be an issue there for that customer.
So I imagine other utility companies have already meters like this that you communicate with them, right?
Exactly.
So do they end up that now customers have way more information than they had before? Does it end up causing a lot of additional calls to your customer service center that, you know, they're checking their meter and how could they have already used this much and it's only been 10 days, or wanting to know where they're at with something because they have something big planned? Or does it lead to almost too much information sometimes?
You know, I suppose, I haven't heard that, honestly, Commissioner, but I suppose that could happen. But I think, as you're aware of through other conversations, I think the ADP, when we talked about that, you know, the adoption rate that people actually go out and, you know, access their meter information, see how much they're using, you know, we're hopeful that people will do that, but we also are realistic in knowing that a lot of people, you know, they care that the lights are on or off and how much they're paying. And so we don't expect that to happen, but I'm sure there'll be some that'll be like, hey, I've been looking at this and I don't understand why, you know, when I look at today versus yesterday versus, you know, 3 months ago or something, that my energy consumption is more. Okay, we can go to the next slide then. I think we've talked about some of this already. Our O&M savings, actually, we probably talked about all this. Maybe the main points here is we are expecting in the 2017 time frame that, 2027. The times I want to go back, but maybe, I'm not sure.
Doesn't feel like that long.
No, I know.
We're talking 5 years already.
Yeah, that's. We were in here talking about Big Stone Ellendale back then. So, So by 2027, we're looking at where we'll be. The customers will be on the right side of our investment, so they'll actually start saving money by 2027. So it's going to take some time to get our systems up and running, and then you know, some of the savings on the labor side and the meter reading and such, and then there will be a positive benefit to them.
So just to clarify that, so you're expecting by 2027, if it were just these projects and the rider, that's kind of the point where it would turn around. Instead of being a net cost rider, it would be kind of a credit rider at that point.
This would be for AMI specifically, okay, and maybe Paula has some other comments she'd like to make from that. Right.
I can do that. At 2027 is when the expense portion of it turns into a credit. But if we're looking at the revenue or the, I'm sorry. What did you say? Please help. It's okay. when we're looking at the earnings, the good grief, I lost the word. The total revenue requirement by 2030 will be a credit. That's okay. What I'm trying to say.
With all the projects.
With just AMI.
Oh, just AMI.
Yeah, yep. That's just AMI. And going forward, of course, it'll stay a credit with just AMI. So once we get to, a point further out, that's going to be for all projects, but that is going to be a while longer. So
okay.
OMS and demand response don't show the same types of savings, straight out savings to our customers, but they have the other benefits that are so nice to have. So, so that's why we're not seeing the same result.
What was the distinction between 2027 and 2030?
Let me just pull this up so that I'm telling you the right story here. Because my words left me there.
You seem awfully young for that.
Oh. Thank you. I'm not. I think I'm at that older age where that happens. our return on rate base, that's what I was trying to say. The return on rate base will be less than our savings in 2030. So that's why we end up with a total credit at the end, when we get to 2030. But our return on rate base is still a debit, and the expenses turn into a savings in 2027. So that's why we're seeing the expenses are going to be decreasing from, the time AMI is implemented until, really kind of forever. We sort of escalated our savings knowing that if we were having to pay these expenses all of those years, they would go up, right? Our meter reading would increase in cost and everything. So we kind of increased what we thought our savings would be at that rate. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So,
and how about, what year does it kind of max out? So in this first year, we don't have all of the expenses in the revenue requirement quite yet. So do you have an estimate of what year the revenue requirement is going to max out? Like, is it 2024, 2025?
End of 2024. I would say probably 2025 is really when it's going to happen, because the project,
the project will wrap up at the end of 24, and then the costs, as we finish making the final payments and those kinds of things, will probably carry into 2025 a little bit.
Okay. And what, ballpark what that revenue requirement would be? I'm not looking for a number to hold you to, just kind of an estimate.
I have that. Definitely an estimate, but I have that. So we're looking at $3 million, of course, in this first year. 2024, we're looking at about $3.5 million, and I think 2025 is probably going to be about the same, because that's when demand response is kind of ramping up while our AMI is coming down. So when you look at total revenue requirement, it's probably going to be about the same, and then
so approximately 3.5. And is that for just the AMI or for all?
That's for all of them. Okay. That's total revenue requirement.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, you're welcome. Thanks. Thanks for your patience.
All right, I think we've probably covered the costs on this slide. Any other questions on this? All right, we'll go to the next slide then, just kind of where we're at with the project on the AMI project itself. So we talked about the few phases of the project. We completed our vendor selection, as I mentioned. We've got all of our contracts were done late 2021, and so through 2022, we've been really working on our workshops with primarily our AMI vendor, Alanis and Gear, and our customer information service, customer information system, Kayenta, to work through all the workshops and get ready for integrations to take place. So we are wrapping those up, and now we're moving into the actual integration. So they're building out their systems to meet our needs. And then as we start from, mid-July approximately into Q1-ish 2023, we're working on getting all those systems integrated together so that meter information will get where it needs to go and be available to produce our bills, and then integrated with our new customer engagement portal that we're working on as well, and tied to our OMS system. So we got a lot of moving parts as we're moving through the next, really the next year will be a big part to get everything, all those systems integrated. And then we'll be deploying our system fully in the middle of 2023. And it'll take us about a year and a half or so. So that's why we're looking at the end of 2024 to wrap up the deployment of the AMI project. Any other comments, or we'll move on to the next slide? All right. So another component of our I-2030 portfolio is our outage management system. And we're super excited about this system as well. We recognize, especially with storms that have happened in 2022 and trying to deal with customer, I don't mean that in a bad way, deal with, manage, maybe that's a better way to say it, support our customers, but manage through customer calls during those storms and getting out and being responsive to our outages and taking care of our customers. We're really excited about what an OMS system can do for us. And a part of that OMS system is really not even noted here, but we'll go forward with a new interactive voice response system as well, and that's going to be an enhancement to where we are. We expect that'll take a lot of calls and help us filter those calls right to our OMS system directly. But currently, as noted, we don't have an OMS system. Our customers have to call in. They have to talk to somebody specifically today and say, hey, this is Al. I'm out of power. Where are you at? Those kinds of things. And so that's how we still do that at this point in time. But as we move forward with our IVR and our OMS and our connection to our customer information system, when customers call in, even, we'll identify the phone number they're calling from, we'll associate it with an account that is associated with them, and then directly can get fed into our OMS system to say, hey, Al, he called in from this number, his address is there, and he's out of power. So we're excited even just about the calling feature that will come as a part of that. And then as we roll out AMI, when the meters give a last gasp, they call it, or notify us that the outage has occurred, certainly that will give us that opportunity to automatically take that information in right away.
So when you automate, I had never thought of this question before, but when you rely on that phone number, what about your customers with multiple services?
Yeah, we're working on how that's going to be associated right now. We're in the workshops between Kayenta and our OMS provider, MilSoft. They have a primary contact number right now, and then we're trying to decide if that primary contact number will be associated with multiple services or how we're going to sort through that. So it is a good question. We don't have a full answer for that just yet. So
I'd hate to think that the customer, other than explaining to a human being where the location they're talking about is,
right,
is going to be expected to keep track of their separate account numbers to,
right,
punch some number in to tell a computer where the outage is at.
That was a conversation we had just the other day where somebody said, well, yeah, but if they plug in their account number, and I said, nobody's going to type in their account number. Let's just be honest about it. I don't have it written on my refrigerator to walk over and type it in. We've all faced that, right? It's like, put your account number in. Yeah, I don't know where it is. So,
yeah.
We're definitely focused on that. I think one of the things that we're thinking about in that regard, certainly, is when AMI is deployed, we'll have that dual confirmation as well. We'll have the information from the meter that will tell, it'll be specifically tied to location. The meter itself will have a GIS coordinate. So, like in my house, I have two meters. Each one will have a GIS coordinate. So, a customer that has multiple meters will get that information directly from that meter and will be able to associate that outage to that specific meter. So, the call-in piece, we're still working on, but I know when AMI is deployed with OMS, we'll definitely have that down to a T.
What is the OMS? Like, what? How does the system work, and what actually is being deployed?
Yeah, so an OMS outage management system is a system that helps us in many different ways. One, as mentioned, specifically when we have our meters that we'll call in, it will tell us specifically to our, we're going to actually have some OMS operators that will tell us where an outage is. So it'll call in and it'll say, here's an outage. It's reported at Al's house at Battle Lake. Our customer service rep or our outage management person can then use that to dispatch our crews directly if we want, or we could have it sent to them directly if we wanted. It'll identify where it is. It'll identify the people that would normally respond to that outage. And we're working through if we would push that to those group of people or if we would have we're looking at having specifically somebody verify that there's an outage and then push that out to those people.
Is it software
it's a software system, right? It's a software system that will take all the data and then it can do prediction to say if all of our meters call in and we happen to be on the same transformer, it'll actually predict that transformer is out of power, for example. Or it could actually predict that the feeder, if we're all on one feeder, it can actually predict that feeder is out of power. So it has intelligence in that regard to say, this is what I think the problem is as well.
Was it connected to the AMI? Like, did you have to have that in order to do that?
We did not. We did not, no.
Okay. They're separate.
They're separate, right. Right. Some utilities have actually deployed an OMS system without an AMI system because, as we talked about, even the phone call, because it'll ingest that stuff automatically to say, hey, I've got all these customers that have called in, and this looks like Bismarck is out or Battle Lake is out or someplace in Fergus Falls is out. So it's a, for lack of a better way to say it, it's kind of a filtering tool to go through and say, this is what it looks like it's going on. And help us direct our resources. Other things it'll be capable of doing, it'll be capable to help manage our teams. So we're going to have a tool that will say these are the people that are available today to respond to outages. It'll track who's working at different locations, for example. And it will also give us the ability for our field team to enter estimated time of restoration or cause of outage and those kinds of situations so that we can more intelligently respond to customers if they happen to call in or ask for some information. It will also give us the ability to tell you that you're out of power. So our system right now on the AMI side, it's not typical for an AMI system to tell a customer directly that you're out of power. It'll send an alarm, but they typically don't do the customer communication. So the outage management system will be able to text messages out to customers and say, or do a robocall kind of thing to say your power should be on. If not, press 1 or something similar to that, or a text message to say, you know, you're out of power, or this is the time we think you're going to get your power restored, or call us or notify us if you're not back on, those kinds of things. That's some of the customer benefit, I feel.
It doesn't redirect traffic, though. It doesn't, like, control the grid in any way.
No, it does nothing of that sort.
Okay.
But one of the primary drivers or needs for an OMS system, and it's in our costs here, is an accurate GIS system. And because it relies on that connectivity model of all of our electrical facilities to say, this is what if the facility is accurate, if your system connectivity is accurate, then it can tell us more intelligently what's going on. And so that's why we rolled that into this project. Then we know, because at this point in time, our GIS system has largely been developed from our maps from 115 years or whatever you want to call it, and this is what it appears to be, and now we're out actually finishing that data collection to say, this is what we actually have.
Do you have any estimates as to how the reliability metrics might improve. I have noticed this was kind of a tough year for Otter Tail.
Right.
You guys had a lot of outages. Some of them beyond your control, obviously.
Right.
But any predictions for how much this will improve the outages? Reduce the outages?
I wish I could tell you that. You know, one thing, the OMS system with our AMI system, I don't know. But the one thing that we're definitely enthused about is the ability to actually take our reliability information, momentary outage types of things that we might not really respond to, but it can be a signal of a greater problem. So take that information, take the actual sustained outage information, and then with some of our analytics capability that we're going to have, some with OMS, probably more so with our AMI side of the house, model that to see where we should be focusing some of our efforts on for reliability, and we'll have some financials that go with that plugged into these models to say, you know, where can we start, get our bigger bang for the buck as we move our way through that. The difficult part on some of this is we'll have more accurate data than we probably have right now, so it's hard to know, will things be the same but look better or worse when we deploy this system, because it'll be a little bit different measurement than what we're doing currently. We currently have, you know, we can tell you when a feeder's out, but that's it. We can't tell you, like, is everybody really out on the whole feeder? We have to have some more assumptions with what we're doing right now, and in the future we'll definitely have more granular data. So there is that, for lack of a better term, on our side, a little bit of fear, like, oh, it may look worse initially, you know, honestly.
Okay.
All right.
And I've got one question here. Will that dovetail and occur at the same time, this program, as you guys upgrade your IEEE standard? I think right now you are on some alpha type program.
Oh, for our
reliability
indices?
Yeah.
So I'm not the outage reliability expert, Rod Jensen would be, but yes, that's the direction we're moving, is to that beta system that we're moving towards.
Right. Yep. And then so I think that's just what you're saying, is that you're going to get a different flavor of the data in terms of maybe how major event days and sustained outages are happening, so that when we go back and look historically, perhaps we might be comparing apples to oranges, perhaps.
Yeah, we're definitely talking about that and trying to figure out, you know, how we should go about that and how we should work with our different commissions in the three different states, and, you know, how we report reliability and how we're going to do that today and in the future, and what we need to do to not be so apples to oranges comparison as we move ahead, but definitely on our radar. Thank you.
Hey, move on to slide 12.
Yeah. All right, well, it looks like I spilled the beans. I kind of talked about a lot of this already here, so... I think some of the big pieces that I actually have mentioned already, but I think we're really excited. One, just to manage our outages better, and two, directly, and the thing that our customers tell us about is, you know, we don't know enough from you. So that's where we're really excited about how an OMS system and our new platform, that our customer engagement portal that we're working on, and all of these together, will definitely give our customers better opportunity to know what's going on, and a communication directly from us. I think just calling them or texting them or whatever that ends up being for each customer, because they'll be able to sign up for their preference. This is what's going on. This is when we think the power will be restored. And we all know power restoration estimates are a little bit of a shot in the dark, because you get out there, you think it's this, it really isn't that, and you've got to kind of keep on top of that. But we feel like that'll be, you know, a good thing for our customers. And then our outage map itself is going to get better, because we'll have that granularity to know, you know, how small of an area we can display to our customers. And then still being sensitive to any kind of API kinds of things that, you know, do they really need to know that it's Al Capritz that's out of power, or how do we show that on a map? And we're currently having those discussions right now.
And so that is one of my concerns with communications that can sometimes potentially be excessive too.
Right.
So I can imagine some value in notifying people that they're out of power if they're not at their location, but for the most part, I mean, if they're there, they know that. But when you start giving estimates so frequently of when power is going to be back on, and then they make decisions based on that estimate, and then it doesn't develop that way, does that impose any kind of liability on the company then? Because, well, you know, you said it was going to be on by 6 o'clock, and so I brought my employees in at 6,
right.
And now here it's 10, and it's still not working.
Right. No, that's a good question. I'm not the liability expert, but I do know that it is definitely something we're talking about when, you know, I've specifically said to our team, let's make sure that, you know, that we're not so trying to be so finite and, like, is it 15 minutes, is it an hour, is it 2 hours? We definitely need to be cognizant of what we're telling our customers, and although our field people will have an opportunity to do some updates to that, we also want them to be fixing the problem and not spending too much time on their handheld device trying to tell everybody what the new estimated time of restoration is going to be. So we definitely have to walk the line on what that right communication is.
I hope that's being planned for, because I can really see some problems if you're just kind of trying to spread encouraging messaging.
Right.
They make decisions based on it.
Right. I agree. All right. Next slide, then. Unless there's other questions. This is it's pretty simple. Our OMS selection and execution is a much smaller project. We went through 2021 and the selection side to select MillSoft, and we went into contract negotiations late last year. We finished it up early this year, and so we're in the execution piece of this. They're currently working on getting our GIS system up to date. We gave them our initial model, and then our contractor, Davey Resources, is updating our GIS data and feeding that to us, and we're sharing that with MillSoft to get our system connectivity model to the point that it's accurate and consumable. And then we expect to really be done kind of with our GIS data gathering by the end of this year, but then it's going to go into Q1 of next year to finish up the total integration of that information. And then we'll be working late in 2022 here to get some of our interactive voice response up and working, and then into 2023 to really fully implement the outage management system and its coordination with our customer portal and our customers. And there's a number of things that still have to get worked out there, to your point, Commissioner, earlier, just how, you know, what's our customer communication plan, how do we make sure that we're not overly communicating and being accurate and make sure that we're not getting ahead of ourselves. You know, at times we can get ahead of ourselves as utilities, and that's kind of where we're focused on that too, to make sure that we're, you know, right there where the customer needs us to be. So
where is this equipment sourced?
So this is primarily software, and it's going to be most of it will be hosted at Otter Tail Power on our server there. And then the interactive voice response system will be a software as a service provided by MillSoft. But the software, primary software, will be at Otter Tail Power.
Where's MillSoft?
MillSoft's based out of Texas. I think it's Abilene, Texas. All right, I think that's all I have. Unless you have any further questions, I believe I turn it over to Tanya for her comments on demand response.
Tanya.
Good morning, Commissioner. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Commission staff. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to update you on our load management replacement project. And thank you for allowing me to remotely attend today. Wanted to give you a little bit of background on our current system, as well as our customer adoption. We are very proud of our strong customer adoption at Otter Tail. About one third of our customers participate in some form of demand response. This program utilizes a number of different components, network communications, hardware and load control switches, as well as a head-end software system. And our system has been, I've seen in documentation currently in production since 2004. We've had previous load control programs for many years prior to that, but its latest system has been in use for close to 20 years. We do have some complications with the current system in that the current software is running unsupported by the vendor. We do have a very active employees that are managing that system for us and have contingency plans for that software. And we've also built a number of programs around the existing legacy Converge software as well.
Tanya, can you quantify the, and tell me a little bit more about the customers, the one-third of the customers who are participating, are they largely industrial with backup generation, residential? What do those customers look like? And then also, how often are they actually called on?
Yes, I can give you some background. I maybe don't have the exact specifics and statistics that you're looking for today. I can certainly provide them at a later date as well. But we do have residential demand control, hot water heating control, air conditioning program. We have some large dual fuel, small dual fuel customers, thermal storage. Those are the types of technologies that this program enacts load control upon. And the amount of control has really varied over the years that I've been involved with the program. Again, we have a very active program that goes out and looks to arbitrage market prices, as well as the utilization of the system for the load modifying resources for capacity purposes in the MISO market. And much less so over the last number of years for reliability purposes, specifically within our own service territory. So our steering committee that meets once a month does set a target for the number of hours of control within a seasonal period. And we're evaluating where market prices are at the time to initiate control. So the amount of control really varies based on current market value, energy costs, as well as where we might be with the amount of control that we've already enacted in the season. Again, I can get you more specifics and statistics those if you'd like, but that's the broad basics of how we're controlling.
I appreciate that. And yeah, if you, on a, you know, after the fact can provide some additional insights, that would be interesting to have.
I think it would be very valuable because I'm hearing more and more people throw this around. Well, you know, we can use demand response systems and take the peaks off. And I think a lot of different people have a lot of different perspectives on what that would mean. An hour or two a summer or every afternoon.
Thank you, Tanya.
Yes. So what we have seen is that we are in a position to look at replacement of our current system.
Uh-oh. I think we lost it.
It's a connection being
I think the whole
hosted
thing
by the same. It's going to host the demand response system.
Let's hope not.
Hello? Hello? Are you there? Can you hear us now?
Am I still with you?
Yep.
You are. Yeah. Sorry, I don't know if that was our end or yours, but you're back, so. Can you hear us, Tanya?
I think it's her end because I can hear you guys.
Am I still with you?
Hello, we can hear you. Hello?
I have visual, but I am not hearing any audio.
Hello? Can you hear us now?
I can, thank you.
Okay.
I muted us when I brought the meeting back.
Say that again. Oh, I see. Okay, sorry. The computer system did things we didn't tell it to do.
Happens to me all the time.
All right. We're on page 14, I think.
Yeah, and I think we can probably go to the next one. We are at a point in the legacy of the system to look at replacement of it. Demand response has provided a number of different benefits. We really do believe that this is a cooperative program with our customers, reduces the energy costs for the participating customers through the use of the reduced rates, but it also provides system benefits to the company and customers as a whole. It lowers energy and fuel costs, provides efficiency to the grid. It also has some avoided generation capacity. We're able to use that capacity in the MISO markets as an LMR resource. Avoided energy and transmission charges, as well as some system emergency protections.
Tanya, could you either now or after the fact quantify those benefits more specifically? I'm in particular interested in knowing what is the capacity factor for your DR that you get accredited at MISO, and And then if you can quantify the how much DR has helped lower the energy and fuel costs, that would be helpful to know as well.
Sure. I can tell you that our legacy customers on a very cold winter day could provide us up to 90 megawatts. Generally, in the summer, it's quite a bit less. We're largely relying on water heating to provide demand response, and that gets us about 18 megawatts of accreditation in the current yearly capacity construct. So it's based on the summer season. We've also added the additional large load at Jamestown, which provides us another 90 to 95 megawatts of load control year round.
Wow.
Again, the value of the load control can really vary. We're very actively using this program to manage market costs. And so as electricity costs go up, that value increases. Previous years where we had decreased energy costs, that value is attenuated. So I can provide some more background on that to you directly if you'd like.
Sure. And is that something you can track? Like when you implement the DR, because prices are high, do you track that?
We do track them. Yep, we do. It's to be honest, it's quite a laborious exercise for us with our current system. I believe in one of these slides here, I discussed that we currently have a one-way system, and so the communication signal goes out to the receivers, and we don't receive communication back as to how much load was actually controlled. Was load growing at that point or not? And so after the fact, we have to do quite a lot of analysis and calculation to be able to really effectively analyze how much was available to us in the system, and compare that to our day-ahead bids and offers in the MISO market compared to the real-time actuals, looking at our forecast accuracy and things like that. So there's quite a bit of art and science that goes into that after the fact. We're hoping with the new system that financial benefit will be something that we can automate and much more quickly come to an answer.
Got it. All right, thank you.
Just for clarification, did I hear you correctly where you said that demand response, the benefit is more for your large commercial businesses versus like residential?
I'm not sure that that was exactly what I was trying to say. Forgive me if I misspoke. What I was trying to infer was that, you know, previously we had used it perhaps more regularly for system events on our own system if there was a localized reliability issue within our service territory. We might need to do localized load reduction in order to facilitate either transmission maintenance or house move or things like that. We also use it for the load modifying resources for capacity purposes within MISO. You know, up until this time, MISO has not called out LMRs very frequently, if at all. But we expect that that will continue to increase within the MISO market in the future. Otter Tail, however, has used it very actively as an economic program to help reduce the cost of energy, not only to provide those rates of relief to customers that sign up, but also for the overall cost of energy to all customers.
I was just reading something yesterday on it and with load management, and it didn't impact the overall cost, wholesale power cost, went on a residential level. So I'd be curious, looking forward to your data on this, on the cost savings down to granular on residential.
And Tanya, you were saying that that's something that the new system will be able to track and provide more easily than the current system.
It is something that we're looking to have vendors respond to a proposal and help us understand if that's something that they can provide us. Any other questions?
Doesn't look like it.
Okay. I might have one more slide here. So our timeline. We are currently in the RFP phase. Request for proposals was released yesterday. We sent that out to 5 different vendors that we know can provide a variety of the components within our system, as well as some other strategic partners that may be able to provide us with some software information or other types of grid analytics. We do expect to install software in the coming year, with hardware installation to follow the subsequent year. And this is a multi-year project. We expect it to continue through the end of 2006 and into 2026. And I have, I'm following Al's lead, and it could extend to 2027. Again, it's a very recent project development, and so just a few slides here for you today. I do have some notes.
One quick question before you go to the cost stuff, and I know the response to this, but we have to ask. We're assuming you're clearing these vendors carefully through the NERC pre-approved vendor lists regarding cybersecurity and making sure that you're, you know, covering all those bases very thoroughly.
We do have a cross-functional team that is evaluating or will evaluate the proposals. That does involve IT, as well as other folks that are involved in metering. And so, yes, that will become part of our process.
Okay. So that's one thing as far as, you know, NERC-approved things. But just as far as the longevity of a system, when once you invest the customer's money into it, you had said earlier that the vendor's no longer supporting the current system. And so when you're choosing these, how do you evaluate that to know that you're not selecting a vendor that in a couple years is going to say, well, we don't support that anymore? It almost seems to me like the best way to sell something is to quit supporting what you sold before. How do you evaluate that to make sure that we don't buy something that in a year or two you have the same problem?
I think we would look to negotiate within the contract the same way that AMI has done, some guarantee for continued service and support.
Okay. It doesn't sound like you've had that question's been answered. It doesn't look like that question's been answered.
Especially tech companies come and go, and so a guarantee from someone who's no longer in business
is
very much good. And I don't know what to do better. It's not like I have a suggestion. I don't know how we avoid those kinds of things.
Sure. I would say that the vendors that we targeted for the release of the proposal are vendors that have had longstanding business relationships, longstanding companies, and these are well-vetted companies that have name recognition and longevity in the environment. It was not dispersed, to the general population. It was specifically targeted to vendors that have resources and reputations in the industry.
Just a reminder for folks online to mute if you're not talking. Just we're getting a decent amount of background noise. It is? Oh, okay. Sorry, Tanya. You got wind in your office.
I'm not work from home, not kids, but.
All right. So I guess we're done with project overview.
And I think I turn it back to Al now.
Hold on.
I think it's my turn. Oh, praying that my words stick with me and that my face doesn't get quite so red. So,
we're pretty friendly, don't worry.
Well, good. Yes, you are. So the revenue requirement slide would be our next one that we're looking at. And this just shows the breakdown of the three different projects and also shows you the savings that we're anticipating for that first recovery period. And that has been subtracted from the total so that we can come to that just a little over $3 million for this first stretch. And then on the next slide, the rate design, like they mentioned earlier, is based on a per meter charge. And we actually did look at what is it going to cost to install a meter at each of the different types of services. And then we took the total cost of all of the meters for each of those types of services and calculated the percentage then of each of those to the total. And then we're using those percentages to allocate the current recovery or the current amount for this recovery period revenue requirement. Does that make sense? So we really are kind of looking for cost causation here, billing this out according to what these costs would need to be billed. And in doing that, the residential customers are going to be getting a charge of $1.71 per month per meter. And then the average residential customer using 1,000 kilowatt hours per month are going to see an increase of about 1.3% on their bill. And that's, of course, for the full, all three projects that are involved there. And then we do have all... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sounds like you were starting to talk about this, so go ahead.
Oh, and then, well, maybe not. we have all of them on the next slide, then, all of the different per meter charges on the next.
So for the second one, the residential demand control, I'm assuming is what RDC is. Why the significant difference in price between a standard residential versus the demand control residential?
I think, and maybe Al can fill you in more on this, but as far as I know, with the costs I received, it's actually going to cost more to program those meters and get them ready to go. Would that be correct? And the meter itself may cost a little bit extra as well.
Yeah, I think that's accurate, Paula. The exchange of the meter, it's going to take a little extra effort there because the new replacement meter won't have the same type of output that we are currently using right now. So we have a software component to making that work. So I believe that's a contributor to that change there.
And are all of these increases or
yes.
over their current charge?
Yes, yep. These are the per meter charges that we'll be adding to their bills.
And those are permanent? Like that's going to be there forever?
Well,
or is it while you pay for it? Or
yeah, it'll change each year. We'll file again with
okay.
new rates.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah. This will
Got
be
it.
Like a new line item on the bill for this new rider. That will
so this is basically the rider charge.
Yep, yep, yep.
Got it.
Yep,
got
yep.
it.
And it's a different methodology than most of our other riders for all of our companies. So
mm-hmm.
just since it's a per meter charge instead of a volumetric or a percentage based, most of them are I think are kilowatt hour based. As far as when we look at all three of the companies we regulate, Otter Tail's, most of them I think are percentage based. If I'm remembering correctly, this would be a little bit unique in that it's a per meter based.
Yeah.
Charge.
Now that I'm kind of clicking in on this, can you go over again how you did the calculation for, the cost drive, how you identified, large general service should get 71 per meter?
Yeah, we actually looked at the cost of each type of meter that
okay.
these services were going to require, and then also the cost to program the meters
I got
to do what
it.
They need to
okay.
do. Yeah,
sorry.
Okay, I think we're back to me. We'll move on to slide 19. I'm sorry, slide 20. That one. There we go. As I mentioned earlier, we wanted to take just a few minutes and talk a little bit about opt-out. We didn't specifically mention it or address it in this particular filing. Just some unique things about our AMI system. Every customer is going to get a new meter under this project. We're not anticipating or planning to maintain an ongoing inventory of analog meters or the manual meters that we currently are using. And considering the geography, the 422 communities that we have across all of our jurisdictions that we're serving, at this point it's our preference that we remotely read all of the meters. If we have to start deploying resources to go out and read a handful of manual meters, out in all these different small towns, we begin to lose a lot of our efficiency and cost savings that we're anticipating, from the system. If we were to, be required to provide an opt-out option, basically, what would happen is we would go out and that meter would still be there, but we would be physically disabling the radio transmitter and disabling that communication. The meter would still be collecting the usage data, but the meters would only be read manually at a periodic basis. We would need to assess develop and assess an additional meter reading fee to cover those incremental costs. And also in terms of, if a request were to come in, if somebody doesn't want it read automatically, we'd have to make a trip out to, disable the radio. And then when the customer were to leave, we'd have to go back and turn it on again. And so there would need to be some separate fees to cover those costs as well. But that's kind of the general, mechanics of what would happen in technology. I don't know, Al, if you have any, other things to add to that. But that's kind of where Otter Tail is at in terms of, I think ideally for us to capture the savings and the efficiency gains that we're anticipating, that, we'd like to be able to do that with all customers and not have those opt-out options.
So is this equipment something that's located outside the home, like hold outside meters, or is this in the customer's basement or business or something that when you're talking about disabling or enabling a radio or any other maintenance that someday one of these is going to go bad and you have to work on, does this require going inside the structure or is this done outside?
Yeah, we do have a number of customers that have their meters inside their facilities or their readings are taken now, right. Manually we have to enter their premises. And
does that all end with this or does...
That would end with...
Right.
With this.
It would end with this, exactly. If we
all this will be outside.
I'm sorry. No, I think what Stuart was reflecting on is the meters, if they're automated meter reading, we wouldn't have to go into the premises to read the meter, but we're not going to be moving all the meters that are currently inside. Some are inside apartment buildings, some are inside specifically customer homes. Sometimes they built around them when they added on their screened-in porch or something to that extent as well. So we don't intend to move meters outside of a resident or outside of a building, whatever that building might be. If there's a safety issue, we're going to work with the customer for that side of it. But we don't intend to incur that cost ourselves. It would be a substantial fee because it's not an easy task to take on. But if we're doing automated meter reading, we would no longer have to at least go inside the building to read the meter from the customer. So that's the piece that we would be speaking to.
Do a lot of your existing meters exist outside the...
Yeah, most all of them are outside. Yeah. We might have 5 or 10,000 in a building.
So to switch that out now to this new system, do you have to go inside their homes, or do you do that outside the building?
If we were to just replace the meter... Yeah, we would go into the home and replace the meter, or in the building, whatever the building might be, and replace the meter, right?
But what if the meter is outside the building?
Then we just do it on the outside of the building.
Okay.
Right.
So people who are not used to you coming in their homes, you don't have to come into their homes.
Correct.
To switch the meter.
Yeah, everything's in the meter, and 90-plus, 98% maybe or something are on the outside of the facility. Okay.
Do you have more thoughts on the opt-out?
It barely relates to this case, but I will say not every company is the same. And, when you serve a lot of small communities, then your reading costs manually, if there's an opt-out possibility, are going to be much higher than if it's almost all the customers are in several large cities. So that's a difference here between this case and maybe some other cases. I also think some of this is company management. If you're not offering an opt-out, that's a decision you're making. And upset about it. He upset the seal. I guess in other situations, I get concerned if you know, offer to opt out and make it sound like you're offering that and then put such a price tag on it that it makes it impossible for people. But if you're not offering it, and I think for kind of a justifiable reason with all the large number of communities you serve, that's a decision you're making. I'm not going to object to it.
Do you have any sense of your customers and their how they're going to respond to that? These new meters, and with you know no option to not have the manual reading or to disable the radio. Any sense?
You know, I guess at this point it's hard to say. I think you know once that deployment process begins, you may. You know,
have you done it in other states yet? Nope.
No.
We're gonna deploy our first 1,000 here this next spring, and you know we'll get. I don't know if we'd really even get a sense, honestly, to that because we'll probably be looking for people that are more on the volunteer side or, you know, it'll probably be employees and things, you know, part of our test proof of concept kind of piece there, so.
One thing I would add, too, is I think there's going to be a pretty robust communication plan, you know, around mm-hmm. all of these changes that our communications folks are working on, and you know, we're not just going to show up one day at their door, you know, without having advanced communications to our customers. And I think through that process, we're going to learn, you know, if there are concerns, we will probably start to hear it at that point, you know, from those that are specifically concerned about it. But.
So it's hard for me to understand how you erode the cost savings if you charge a move-in, move-out fee. So can you have you looked at what that would be?
We've done some real rough calcs. I wouldn't say, and I'm not sure that I would you know, state it today, but it's because we have to do a little bit more detail analysis. I think it's more of, you know, we're talking about you just have to have the people. You know, you're going to have, you know, or contract somebody to go out and do those readings. Yes, we would be charging an additional fee for it, but I think you're losing, you know, some of the other benefits that will come with not having that radio enabled. I think in terms of whether it's outage management communications, I think there's you know, having these additional resources that are still going to have to go out every month and, you know, read these meters. You're going to run in trucks. You're going to be having people on property again. You know, some of the safety risks, some of the other things, you know, mm-hmm. they're coming back into play again. So,
well, I'd be interested in what you'd be looking at for a fee. Because I do think it's worthwhile to be consistent among our companies that we regulate, and we've, I think, required that from others. So I'd at least like to know what your fee is. And you've already mentioned that, you know, the staff aren't all going away immediately, and I would also think that people choosing this would be something that fades away and, you know, fairly quickly probably if, you know, maybe there's a handful the first round and then over the course of a couple of years the adoption becomes more seamless. So if you guys could file what you would propose as a fee for turning move-in, move-out fee, that would be helpful, I think. To look at and to understand.
We can do that.
Okay, thank you, Stuart.
Mm-hmm.
I will say if we're going in that direction, one of the things that I think is important in keeping that cost just and reasonable would be if people are going to have that option to not accept this, then give them the option to estimate, that they agree to accepting the estimates for, and then just truing it up either quarterly or semi-annually would probably be ideal, but so that you don't necessarily have to go read meters every single month, but could do it a couple times a year.
We can look at that concept. Yeah.
And if it's easier to do it monthly, I'm fine with it. I'd be interested in that as well. I think that people have, if they want to go this route, they have to pay the fair cost for it. So I'm comfortable with that. I'm less comfortable saying you have no choice. You have to have this technology in your house monitoring, that just people have different ideas about this stuff and right, wrong, or indifferent. Mm-hmm. If we can make a way for them to ease into this, I think it's worth considering.
Okay. Last slide, slide 21, again, is I think just kind of we're at the end of our presentation here, a summary of our request. As we mentioned earlier, looking to establish this new rider for purposes of recovering the three projects that we talked about today, and requesting approval of the initial rates that we've discussed to be effective January 1, 2023. That. Any other questions?
Anybody? Sherry, you any more questions for this crew?
No, it was very good information, and I look forward to receiving the additional information as requested.
Good. All right. Do we officially close this then and start the new one, or can we just move right? I think we can move.
I think we can move if I believe these were all noticed together.
Yeah.
So we can just move. I'd like to just kind of quickly summarize what I have as notes, if that's okay, to make sure we capture everything that we're expecting. So we discussed the name change of this rider.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that we have full buy-in on what the name change should be.
I have to be honest. I don't think that electric utility infrastructure tells people what this is. So I was playing with other names as we talked, and I haven't come up with anything yet, but advanced meters is part of it. I mean, just like, let's tell them, that's what you're getting. This is for the advanced meters. And, it's a vast majority of the costs are for that. I mean, the demand response is just a tiny fraction, and then the outage management is, a little bit more, but still quite a small portion. So, anyway, I'll keep playing with it. But if you guys have any wordsmiths on staff who could come up with advanced meters and management tools, or something like that, I just like using simple language. Electric advanced utility infrastructure could be a new wind farm. I mean, it could be.
Yeah.
So it could be anything. So I think that it would be more helpful to just tell people what it is.
Which goes back to something that was in the memo that I thought was really important to keep in mind. Because you adopt something here, and then not only Otter Tail, but other utilities see it, and what limits how many things people can come up with that go into this or a similar rider for immediate recovery. And so I don't know if it's the name that really limits it necessarily, as opposed just how we write this whole thing. But I do think we need to be cognizant of that. I thought that was a really good point.
Thanks for bringing that up, Randy. Yep, I agree.
So we'll keep thinking about a name. One thought I had as we were talking, distribution management, infrastructure cost recovery. Just a thought. It's not perfect. I agree actually with the thought Randy just mentioned, the limitation of the types of expenses that can be recovered through this. I think it would be important if we could spell that out, you know, to kind of limit it to these three: advanced meter infrastructure, demand response, and then the outage management system. If you would add that into the proposed language, I'd appreciate that.
Yep.
So, in addition to the name change, you provide a breakdown of the cost savings, I believe, for Commissioner Heidenhofer. The details of the amount and types of demand response that you have within the system, and the cost savings amounts for that demand response, and then some additional information on move in, move out, and manual meter reading fees that are possible. I guess my thoughts on that subject, it's kind of more of a policy decision whether we provide that optionality or not, but I think it's a little cleaner if we can figure it out before we start having those issues. But, you know, if we create a door, people are going to walk through it, whether mm-hmm. they necessarily need to or not. So there's no perfect answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I captured as far as kind of things that we'll be looking for.
So I could copy Congress and call it the Inflation Reduction Rider. No, like their bill, it really has nothing to do with that.
The cost savings rider.
You make a very good point, Randy. All the more reason to come up with a better name. All right. So thank you, Victor, for summarizing that. I think that concludes this piece. So, Stuart, you want to bring up the next?
Sure, I'd like to see the recording.
Okay.